was football-induced heartbreak, agony and tears on Saturday. But for once, it wasn't because of the Cambridge result. Football isn't coming home yet, but a point from the league leaders helps warm the soul in this chilly relegation scrap. A warm welcome then to this week's Under the Abbey Stand. I'm your host. My name is Jordan Warland. Thanks for joining us as always. I feel like the last few pods haven't been the cheeriest, understandably so, but I've got a good feeling about this week's pod. I feel like there's a little bit more positivity to go around. Got a panel to go through everything from Saturday's point against Plymouth, as well as answering your questions. So let's meet them, starting with A-Block's finest. It's Mr. Owen Kiernan. Good evening, Owen.
Hey, Jordan, how you doing?
This is where you tell me you don't sit in the A-Block.
I don't. I sit in B-Block, but I didn't want to.
Do you want to? I've got it all wrong. I did one game in the main stand, and I think I know my way around, and I've just made myself look like a fool. Is the A-Block where I was in those bucket seats?
The A-Block's the benches down the start. Yeah, I'm constantly moving people out of my seat, but have bought a ticket for that area and think, nah, I don't fancy sitting on those for 90 minutes. I'll go and sit in the decent seats behind.
It is misleading because you're like right by the end. That in my mind is where the A block should be, but never mind. But yeah, Grimsby, that was exciting. I was in the main stand. It was exciting. It peaked about 10 to 3 when I walked in, saw Owen, and then it went downhill from there. Never going on those bucket seats again. Anyway, also joining us this evening, good to have him back on the pod. A warm welcome to Matthew Gooding.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. It's good to be here. You should have stayed in the cabin for the Grimsby game because I had a guy standing behind me who literally went on a monologue about James Brophy for the whole match. He was delivering absolute diatribe to him just for no obvious reason. And it was very cabin, I have to say.
There was a James Brophy question that came in, actually, that I didn't add to the running order. I think it was something along the lines of, is a James Brophy under-hit pass to Harrison Dunk a given in every game now? I'll let you answer that one to start.
Yeah, I mean, his little fan club who was standing behind me would say undoubtedly yes. I think he said at one point, how are you a professional footballer, Brophy? And I was like, well, I mean, I'm not Brophy's biggest fan, but I think it's pretty obvious, really. So yeah, that is a regular feature now, which we can all sort of enjoy cringe over. So yeah, that's probably a good point.
Right. Well, let's look at some other good points from the weekend's action. Starting with the fact there was no missed penalties at the Abbey. But yeah, a much improved outing from the U's. So let's start with everyone's take on the performance. Matt, we'll come to you first. Post-game, you tweeted that the result was decent in the circumstances, but we really should have won. Talk us through your take on the game, the circumstances you refer to there, and whether 24 hours later, you're more or less content with the point.
So I think I'm similarly content, I'd say. I think my hot take from the final whistle still stands. I think the sort of, when I said in the circumstances, I meant just because our form's just so generally terrible, and the two games before we've really sort of obviously struggled and lost to Grimsby and Forest Green. And going into a game against the league leaders, you would probably take a point beforehand, wouldn't you? So I think broadly, I was happy with the performance as well. I think, compared to those last two games, it was really positive. We were, saw a lot more aggression. There was a lot of snapping into tackles. Digby seemed to be like all over the place. And I think, like Bonner said in his post-match, that's the team supporters want to see, and that's the team supporters have got used to seeing over the last couple of years. Now, he's absolutely right. I think one sort of really depressing hallmark of this bad run has been how passive we've been in a lot of games and how things just seem to happen to us without us sort of trying to get control of events. And I think yesterday you saw what we can do even when we're not in great form, which is that we can get in people's faces, we can be aggressive, we can try and play with a bit of tempo, and it's just much more enjoyable. And clearly it was a much better performance generally, and we were much closer to winning the game even though we didn't quite do that. So I think given the sort of the way the game went and the chances that we created, I think it's a little bit disappointing to be sitting here and only have one point and not three from it. But when you look at the overall picture, it's a good point against a good team, and it felt like a step forward after some really depressing weeks. So yeah, so generally 24 hours on, I'd say I'm still pretty happy with how we did.
definitely feels like a step forward, doesn't it? And there were points in the game on Saturday which we just looked like a completely different, refreshed team. I think the first 20 minutes was probably the best opening 20 minutes we've had all season. We really seemed to up the intensity and go at them. And I wonder if that was off the back of seeing how Port Vale got a result away to Plymouth the following week. But yeah, hopefully that level of intensity and pressing and attack stays as we move forward over the next few weeks with some really difficult fixtures coming up. Owen, pre-game, would you have snapped my hand off for a point, or would you have been looking for something bigger than that? And yeah, what was your general take on the performance levels on display? And in answer to this question from Liam, Liam has asked, being disappointed with a point against the league leaders is a good thing, right?
excuse me. Well, pre-game, I'd have snapped your hand off for a shot on target, to be honest. But
got two in like the first 10 minutes. It was brilliant.
It was, yeah. I think we did a lot better than that. I mean, yeah, I'd take a point against Plymouth. They're in great form. They were top of the league until the team that shall not be named.
Well, I was going to follow up with that, Owen. Yeah, like us taking a point meant that we opened the door for your beloved Ipswich Town to go top.
They beat the posh. If I can ever take pleasure from an Ipswich win, it's when they beat that lot. So, yeah, well done, Ipswich. But United, I think, yeah, you're right. We looked like a completely different team, didn't we? Why? I don't know. I've got a few thoughts. Obviously, tactically, we played very differently. It wasn't just lump it up to Ironside. Ironside's a great player. He really is. But I guess he does kind of force us to play a certain way of football. I think in my kind of hot take at the start of the season, I said that Lancaster would end up scoring more goals than Ironside this year.
How's that one going?
Halfway to be proven right. I think Lancaster's got two Ironsides on four.
Lancaster's one at Wickham should have counted as double, if that's any consolation. That was a great goal.
Absolutely should have. Yeah. So yeah, I think I'm doing all right on that front. But I mean, based on the performance on Saturday, Ironside's going to struggle to get back into the team, I think.
Definitely.
They just look like.
We looked like a completely different team without him up top, didn't we? And what a change that makes. And I feel a bit bad saying that because he's been a great servant to the club. But I wonder, yeah, moving into the next few games, who he starts up top. We've got a few questions a little bit later on where we sort of dig in a little bit more to sort of the tactics and the setup and, you know, people playing in the number 10 position rather than elsewhere and up top. So we'll cover all that in a second. But before we get on to sort of individual performances, I wanted to get both of your takes on the following question. So Mark has got in touch and no, it's not Mark Bonner. It's a different one. And he asked, was Saturday our best all-round performance of the season? When you consider the form of the opposition and their league position, I think there is an argument that it is. We looked solid at the back, and although we failed to score, we looked a threat. Owen, how would you rate that statement?
I don't know. I think we played very well against Bolton as well, didn't we? We've contained team, you know, certainly like the bigger teams, the better teams in the division, we have put in pretty decent performances about against them. Even against Derby, we was undone by a mistake, but we generally looked to be coping fairly well. Against Peterborough, we were playing pretty well. Even against Ipswich, we were playing all right until we made a couple of mistakes and they, you know, showed their class late in the game. But, you know, it was definitely up there from certainly over the last kind of eight or nine games as one of the better performances, especially at the Abbey. You know, I think obviously the performance at Wickham would probably outrank it. But yeah,
That's the second time you've been positive about Ipswich, mate. You're right. Are you feeling a bit ill? Sitting in the B block on a freezing cold December afternoon doing things to you? Matt, Owen just mentioned the Wickham game there. I've got a sneaky suspicion that you're going to agree that Wickham was the better all round performance. But how close was the Plymouth one in comparison?
You read my mind, Jordan. That is absolutely uncanny. I was going to say I think Wickham was a better performance in that we were away, a place we never win, a team who are just a pain in the backside to play against. And we scored three goals, didn't we? And we should have had more than that. I think the scoreline was very flattering to them. So I'd say overall, that's the best performance. I think in terms of at the Abbey, I think that's our best. That's the best 90 minutes we've put together since sort of mid-September, certainly since the bad run started. I'd say, given the calibre of opposition, you could probably make a case for it. I guess the MK Dons result at the time seemed like a really good one, but obviously what's happened to them subsequently suggests that it wasn't such an amazing achievement. But certainly I think it was a really good 90 minutes, and I think if we'd gone on to win that, nobody would have complained, and we kept a clean sheet, which has been quite a rare occurrence this season. I think it was only our fourth in the league, and I know from listening to this podcast, I think clean sheets are a platform to build on or something. So
I think that is a thing.
Yeah.
Following on from that sort of question around performance then, Owen, Stuart's got in touch, and also I should probably say thank you to everyone that's got in touch with your questions at AbbeyStanPod on Twitter. But yeah, Stuart's got in touch and he said, well, two parts here, Owen, can we kick on from this result? And in your opinion, what reasons for optimism are there?
Yeah, I think we can kick on. Absolutely. We're not going to have the same season we had last season, but I think as Matt just mentioned, as Tom mentions every single week, platforms are, clean sheets are a platform to build on.
You were so excited to say it, you got it wrong.
I got my words are muddled.
And you're editing this one as well. I look forward to listening to this on Monday and see if you just sort of splice it in perfectly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But no, even throughout this bad run, we have seemed to cut out the mistakes. I can't really think of any really on Saturday. I mean, there's that moment when Harrison Dunk kicked the ball in his own head, and that created a chance, but we recovered from that, and maybe earlier in the season that would have resulted in a goal against us. Reasons for optimism, there's lots around the club at the moment, regardless of what's happening on the pitch. In his pretty much press conference, Bonner said that he's been at the club long enough to know what a crisis is like. I think maybe some of the slightly more hysterical members of our fan base are seeing this as a crisis. And yeah, it's not great. It hasn't been great. We have dropped important points, but there's worse teams than us in this league. Off the pitch, we are sorted. If the worst does happen, it's not going to be the end of the club. I can say that with some confidence, and I don't think a few seasons ago you'd have been able to say that with that kind of confidence. If we do end up going down this year, I think Mark Bonner can get us back out of the division. I know, again, like a lot of people have been questioning him over the last few weeks. For me, it's an absolute no-brainer that he deserves to stay. He knows the club. Who else is gonna come in that understands the club from top to bottom the way he does? We know he can bring players in. We know he can get the best out of players that aren't perhaps on paper that necessarily the kind of best quality players in the league. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of reasons for optimism about the club. I think we will turn this around. I fully expect us to stay up, probably by the skin of our teeth, but when you look at the Abbey, you look at the size of our fan base, you look at the size of our finances, that's where we deserve to be. Mm. If you look at the table currently, the top three sides are probably three of the biggest sides in the division, support-wise, for the rest of the playoffs. That was a third.
That's dangerously close to a third compliment to Ipswich Town. I told you at the start, I thought this was going to be a more optimistic pod. Just goes to show, right? Don't get Tom and Swindle on here, and it's all cheery and butterflies and warm cuddles and things. I think in terms of sort of optimism going forward, I think there's two things that sort of stood out for me. Number one, and sort of tying on to what you were saying there, Owen, about Bonner saying this, identifying this as not being a crisis. I think the commitment is the commitment of the squad is there, and that's something to be optimistic about. Like, normally when you have a team down near the bottom or a team that just keeps not getting results, you can start questioning players. And I know there's people listening to this that would have will question Sam Smith, but that's just sort of one name out of the whole squad. Like, I can remember relegation seasons where you're questioning everyone. You know, you don't score late equalisers away to Forest Green if you haven't got the commitment there. And then I think the second thing to be optimistic about is over the last few weeks or months, confidence has obviously been such a key thing for this squad. It was sort of stuck in this cycle where, you know, you've got a small squad anyway, but then you start getting injuries and a lack of fitness. So you're asking players to play more. They're not getting the results and the performances drop. And because the performances drop, the confidence drops. But because you can't then freshen it up the following week, you then go again. And it's this similar cycle. And I've just felt over the last couple of weeks, we've needed something to sort of kickstart that sort of revival, that spark, you know, a little bit of luck or something. And, you know, I thought against Grimsby, or maybe it'd be the late goal and the fact that we scored at home, but it wasn't. Or Forest Green, I thought it might be the late equaliser, but it wasn't. And I feel like Saturday might be that sort of spark. You know, you've just not only got a point off the team that started the day at top of the league, but you really sort of outplayed them for large parts of the game and should have got more. So my glass is half full. And if that's not a good answer for why to be optimistic, let's just say, you know, Bennett is back in a few weeks. There you go. There'll be people listening that will love that. Matt, on this topic about sort of kicking on and moving forward, am I right in thinking that you're confident that if we play like this consistently, you feel that we'll be sort of working our way back up to sort of that comfort of mid-table? And just on that topic, Bonner post-match said, and I quote, we've got to make sure we hit that level of consistency now, because if we do that, confidence will grow and those chances will start turning into goals. With that sort of quote in mind, like, how do you see us keeping it like this, you know, consistently? Do you think it's the right shape and it's the right players in the right positions now, or is there something else?
I think the shape realistically isn't going to change. Obviously, we had our little dalliance with three at the back earlier in the season, but I don't think Bonner seemed to bin that quite quickly, and I don't think he likes it that much anyway. So I think the shape is fine. I think the players need to, I think we need to make sure we're selecting the best team for the opposition rather than just selecting the same players every week. So I think we're going to have to rotate this sort of small cast of players as best we can. But I think it's just like, I think starting the game well just makes such a difference. And like, I think you were saying earlier, Jordan, like it was, you know, really our sort of best opening period for a while, even though sort of towards the end of the half Plymouth got back into it. I think we'd really set the tone there. And I think getting on the front foot early and having that aggression in our play just really makes a difference, because we're not realistically the most technically gifted squad in the league. Like, a lot of these players are not, you know, top League One players for any other team, but we've seen before what they can do when they, you know, do all that cliche stuff, put in the heart and the desire and the aggression and all that. So I feel like it's just more of maybe it's a bit of a mentality thing, but also just, having that real sort of dynamism and kind of aggression and sort of getting back to basics of what we know we're good at and what makes us a competitive team. And that's what I was sound like. Starting to talk like Mark Bonner, and that's really disturbing. But it's doing that
wearing
stuff,
a gilet,
and
are you?
And I think no, funnily enough, no. I think just doing that stuff when you're not playing well, I think just gets you points here and there, like as we saw yesterday. Whereas if you try and be expansive and try and be the team we want to be in the best of worlds, like, but you're not, your players aren't confident and things aren't running for you, I think that's a really difficult thing to pull off. And I think we've seen that a few times where we've been trying to play through midfield and create a goal in a pretty way like that, but we just haven't been able to do it because we're not in that place at the moment. So I think it's a question of getting all those basics right, and then once we're hopefully starting picking up points on a regular basis again, we can start adding the sort of more expansive elements of the game that we saw earlier in the season that we know we can do as well. But I think, yeah, definitely I'm pretty optimistic that I still have faith that we can kind of certainly, hopefully not be, I don't think we're going to be quite as high up as we were last season, but I think that by the end of the season, we'll hopefully be fairly comfortable. But maybe I'm just wishful thinking there.
Do you know what? I purposely didn't include the question that came in that said, are we staying up? But I feel like both of you have answered that inadvertently in the last few minutes. So great. There we go. That's that one resolved. You talked about the expansiveness, Matt. Let's change the positivity of the pod ever so slightly by talking about going forward. Whilst obviously the point was great against league leaders, the performance was much improved. Defensively, we were really sound. And, you know, we did have a good few chances going forward, but we didn't convert any of them. Omalu has got in touch and he has asked, is it still worrying, even how good we looked yesterday, we just don't seem to really have that scoring touch? What's your thoughts on that, Matt? Is that a worry? I mean, I guess it must be, right?
Yeah, I mean, what is it? It's like over 600 minutes now since we scored a goal at home. I think 603 minutes or something. Great. I mean, it just feels like a long time. Like, yeah, it is a worry, obviously. I think it's less worrying in a game like that where we've created two fairly obvious chances which should have gone in and a few other sort of, we had a few other moments, a couple of shots blocked one there and stuff. So it is worrying, but I think the more worrying thing is when we have been going through games and like we're having like against Grimsby sort of one or two shots on target and you're like, with the best will in the world, even if you're an amazing team, you're not going to score many goals from one or two shots on target. Like, that's just maths, isn't it? So I think if we're, as long as we're creating chances and we're getting in the position, they'll start going in eventually, I'm pretty sure. Like, we know Smith can score at this level. He's always been quite streaky for us so far, like last season when he was going well. So I think if he can get one in the league, I know he scored like 2 weeks ago, but I feel like if he can get on a run, the goals will start flowing for him. And Nibs as well. Like, Nibs gets into these positions every game. And I know, I think I was the, I think if we're going back to pre-season hot takes, like Owen did earlier, I think I said Nibs would be our top scorer, didn't I? So he's start putting those away if we're going to have a true year of the Nibbler. But I feel like if they're getting into those positions and we're creating chances, then we don't have too much to worry about. And it's the goals will happen eventually. Again, this is me being massively glass half full, but yeah.
Poor old Harvey Nibs, we're coming to your chance now. But I agree, Matt. I think the first step is sort of creating more opportunities, getting in behind and having more chances. And yeah, the heart and the brain says that do that enough times, it will start coming. And hopefully we come up against a team soon whose best player isn't their goalkeeper, because, you know, we talk about those missed opportunities on Saturday, but, you know, he did pull off a couple of tidy saves as well. One that he didn't have to save, Owen, that we're going to get your thoughts on, was there was two key incidents in the second half where we had opportunities to score. The first one, pretty early after halftime, fell to our boy Harvey Nibs. And that felt, again, I was talking earlier in the pod about luck and things like that that sort of changed your season. And it felt like that was our kind of our moment, you know, we like the Rossi moment where he forgets to kick the ball, or the Digby own goal. You know, we've given these teams these incredibly lucky, fortunate turn of events, and a Plymouth player just missing a header, thought that's it, that's our moment, that's our little bit of luck. Poor old Harvey Nibs, fell to him and he didn't actually hit the target. But what was your take on that goal, and how big a moment do you think that was?
Yeah, it was. It was one of the key moments of the game, wasn't it? And I think Nibs will be pretty disappointed in himself for not finishing it. I know the keeper didn't say that one, but, you know, yeah, bit of a shout out for him. He was fantastic and probably a big part of why Plymouth are top of the league, making the saves he did in that game, and, you know, probably throughout the season. Nibs in particular, yeah, Matt, you just said he's getting into positions. That's all you can ask for a striker, isn't it? I mean, you can ask for more goals, obviously, but at this level, realistically, you know, Nibs has, I think over the past few years, he's kind of changed, and I think he's only starting to find his, you know, to find his real position. I don't know, like, you know, he started off playing striker, then he had that kind of like purple patch last year, didn't he, when he kind of took over the number 10 role you know, when Wes wasn't playing as much and looked really good and really creative there. He seems to be kind of playing like a wide attacking player now under Bonner.
I think that swap yesterday from Lancaster on the right hand side to the true number 10 position and Nibs out to the right was probably one of the better decisions. That and started with Smith rather than nine side. Those two decisions were really key for how well we performed. So yeah. I don't know. I feel like Nibs offers a lot in the number 10 role in a kind of a pressing, hurry you, make you, you know, jump on your mistake kind of way. But it was good to see Lancaster play it a slightly different way and really pulling sort of people like Brophy Smith and Nibs into play with his passes. And I think although I've criticised Nibs for missing that chance, I do actually think he had a pretty good game out on the right-hand side. And I would say that he's probably staking a claim to make that spot his own because Tracy's form has been a little bit hit and miss to date. So I've been mean to the Nibbler by introducing that question to Owen, but I'll end it by being complimentary in that I think he did a solid shift on Saturday. Matt, let's just touch on the other key incident in the second half. Another chance where we've sort of worked our way through. Smith finds himself one-on-one with a goalkeeper. This time, stood in the habin, thinking, right, well, Nibs missed the first one. Smith's definitely going to bury this one. What was your thoughts and your take on it when it was a save? Do you think it was a big miss or do you think it was a good save?
I'm going to sit on the fence and say it was a bit of both. So I thought that was like, that's like the ideal Sam Smith position. I couldn't believe it because in the right-hand side of the box, he's got time to open his body up. I was just expecting him to curl it into the far corner past the keeper. We've seen him do it so many times. But I think if you see it, it's on the long highlights package on iFollow. I assume everyone listens to this probably knows what iFollow is, but you can see that he really opens his body up and makes it very obvious what he's going to do. And I think that probably gives the keeper a clue and he makes a good block on it. And he actually had time. He could have, because the keeper's a bit more central than I thought he was. He could have whipped it into his near post in sort of Kylian Mbappe style if he'd thought of that. I think possibly the first time Smith's been compared to Mbappe, but maybe not the last, he'll be hoping. So yeah, I think it was a big miss. I think you'd expect him to put that away most of the time, but it's probably just the way things are going for us at the moment, isn't it? That he's, you know, probably not in his, he's not in his peak form. So he's probably not hit it as well as he would have liked to. And the keeper's obviously a decent keeper and made a decent save. So yeah, frustrating, but you know, that's how it goes sometimes, isn't it?
Oh, and just on Sam Smith in general, obviously he's been a hot topic on the pod over the last couple of weeks, upset people with his actions. Do you think yesterday went a good way to sort of healing those actions and those relations? You know, his commitment level can't be questioned. He was fired up. I think he was even, you know, patting the badge at certain points to sort of rally the NRE in that first half as we were attacking. Like, do you think that is a conscious thing for him and he means it, or are you going to be very pessimistic and say, nah, he's just doing it because January's on the way and he needs to get himself in the shop window again?
Bit of both, probably. I think, you know, Jordan, you mentioned earlier in the pod that we've seen United teams that have been relegated and been in trouble where players just aren't really trying. And excuse me, and you can tell that they're collecting their paycheck ready for a move. Sam Smith, he hasn't looked like that, has he, for the last kind of couple of weeks? Maybe before, that's an accusation he could have levelled at him. I wonder if Bonner's had a word with him. But he seemed, yesterday he seemed fired up. He seemed to be intelligent in his play. He seemed to be wanting that goal. Does he want that goal because he knows he's got to work to get the NRE on side? I mean, they sung his name pretty loudly. So he's obviously not upset that many people. I mean, I think Mark had said that Sam's shushing motion was aimed at just one person in particular. I don't know if that's true or not.
We haven't yet found out if that one person was our Tom Walker or not. I've got my suspicions, but maybe we'll never know.
But he looked really, really good yesterday. He looked I'm not going to say back to his best, because if he was back to his best, he'd probably ended with a couple of goals. But he wasn't playing selfishly. He was bringing other people into the game. He looked good. The thump in the badge thing, yeah.
You love to see that, don't you?
You love to see it. It's just part of the modern game, isn't it? Players are going to do that. I don't know if too many people, you know, in the fan base still expect him to be here come January. I know there's a lot of interest in him in the summer. He's not exactly covered himself in glory the last, you know, couple of months on the goals front. So whether that interest's still there in Jan, I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, look, if you play like you play the other day, the fans aren't going to get on your back. And that's all you can ask for, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other performances from Saturday. I think there's an argument to say that pretty much everyone had a good game, but I've got a couple of names that I want to pick out. Matt, come to you first. And good friend of the pod, David, has been in touch, and he asks, Lancaster has to be the number 10 for the rest of the season. Yes or no? We'll let you decide that one.
Oh, it's a big responsibility. I'm going to say no, not for the rest of the season. So I think I would like to see more of Lancaster in the 10. And I think one of the sort of things which has frustrated me about our recent run and Bonner's selections is that we've sort of just decided that Nibs is playing 10 every game, basically. Whereas I feel like you were saying earlier, in the sort of pressing role, Jordan, when we're up against it in these games against the bigger teams, it's great to have Nibs in there. And you think back, like, the first game of the season against MK, a team who have a lot of the ball, he's really useful in that role. But I don't think he's useful in every game, because he doesn't give you what Lancaster can give you that we saw yesterday, the range of passing and the sort of change of pace of the game. And that's something we really lack, particularly, you know, our midfield sort of selection is limited at the best of times, but particularly with May and O'Neill sort of out for the sort of relatively long term. So I think definitely at home and against the sort of teams where we're going to have more of the ball, I think Lancaster should be starting every game for sure. But I think that you've got to sort of tailor it to your opposition a bit. I also think some of Lancaster's best games have been coming off the flank. So I like him on the right, because, and he cutting inside and being able to shoot on his left foot, I think that's a real, it gives you a different sort of point of the attack, and it's a bit different to what the other wingers do. But then obviously you don't have his creativity in the centre. So I would like to see more of him in the starting lineup, and I hope he can put more consistent performances together, because I think my frustration with him is that he doesn't influence the game for long enough periods. You see, yesterday he probably did. He started really well, and then he came back into it in the second half. But I think often you get flashes from him, but not what you feel like he could really do, sort of thing. So I would like to see more consistency from him, and then I think he'll be a first choice pick, being the number 10 role or in sort of one of the wide attacking positions.
We've talked a lot on this pod about the Harvey Nibs, Joe Ironside pivot, and I wonder if we're now starting to see a Lancaster Sam Smith pivot, in those two roles. I really thought Saturday the creativity and the movement of Lancaster was terrific, and yeah, like you say, I would like to see him play their number 10 in more games. Especially
in the way. Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, Bonner probably looked at how the game against Plymouth at home went last season, where we had Smith and Lancaster up front, and that was probably one of our best performances of the season. Both of them had excellent games. So I think he probably looked at that and thought, I will try and recreate a bit of that magic. And I guess it worked to an extent, even though we didn't get the goal. It obviously, both players performed really well. And like you were saying, Owen, I think that was, you know, Smith getting more like back to his best, even if he didn't like cap it with a goal in the end.
Yeah. Owen, after the game, in our WhatsApp group, you were mentioning Dunk's performance, and you put him out there as one of the contenders for man of the match. Just wondered why you enjoyed his game so much. And following on from that, David had a second question, and this time we'll point it towards you. And he wants to know, does that performance mean that good old Harrison Dunk gets yet another year with us?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, obviously a lot can happen between now and the end of the season, but I like Dunk's consistency. I like that he's been here throughout the years. I mean, I guess it depends partly what division we're in next year, but he's proven to me that he can cope at League One standard. We know he's a very good player at League Two standard. I just thought he was really good yesterday. I just thought he had a really, really good game. It was really had the measure of the guy who he was up against, who he was marking. Didn't really let too much get by him. Putting in lots of tackles, putting his head on the line. I'd say it was a quiet performance. There was, he spends half a game kind of in front of where I sit down the end of the main stand there. So, you get to see quite a bit of him in that position, which he just does everything right, really. There was a couple of moments when he took a pretty scuffed shot. Could have done better with that, but he's never been particularly prolific in front of goal, is he? And the moment I mentioned earlier in the podcast where he went to do an overhead kick and it ricocheted back off his forehead and gave away a chance. But other than that, didn't really put a foot wrong. And to me is one of the better players we've had this season. And I know it was Greg's testimonial last week, but for me, Dunk is also up there as an absolute club legend. And I don't think you'd find many people disagreeing with that. And he obviously had his testimonial the season before. Yeah, give him another year. Let's get him to number one.
I wouldn't mind seeing him here for another year or more than that until the end of his career. Although I will be honest, I think left-hand side is somewhere I would look to strengthen in January. I don't like the idea of Bennett coming back and him playing as left back or left wing back. But we'll touch on January in a second. One last question about Saturday's performance before we move on. Sticking with the defence, Matt, talk to me about Rossi. Like, how well do you think he played? And how do you rate him in the sort of pecking order as a choice to partner Jones? Would you say he's your first choice or not?
I mean, it's hard for me because Okadine is one of my favourite players and it's sad for him not to be in the team. Having said that, I think Rossi played really well on Saturday and I think he was playing really well prior to his injury. So I can see why I think in Bonner's head, Rossi and Jones are the first choice at the moment. I expect that to continue for the next few weeks, particularly
until Jones goes in January, right?
I didn't want to mention that particularly horrifying prospect, but you feel like for the longer term, Okadina and Rossi, both on long contracts, are probably going to have to play a few games together eventually. I thought Rossi was really good. I think his actual defending is excellent. His heading, his blocking, his tackling. I think when he brings the ball out of defence, he sometimes looks a bit bemused about life and sort of gets. He takes a few strides forward, then he gets to halfway and he's like, what on earth do I do now? and then he does something quite rubbish. But that's something that can be worked on. And maybe it's just a bit of confidence and will come with playing more games. But I think in terms of what we need at the moment, which is to be solid and to not concede the kind of crazy goals that we were earlier in the season, I think that it makes sense to have him in there. Just his height and his general physicality and his defensive timing is really good. So, yeah, I think at the moment it's his place to lose, isn't it? And I think if we continue to defend like we did on the weekend, then I'm sure Bonner will continue with that combination at the back, transfer window permitting.
I'm with you. I like Jobs, but Rossi stands out a bit, doesn't he, compared to the two? And I think he stands out for the fact that he can break out of the defence and start sort of asking questions as he moves forwards, which is very similar to Jones. I'm of the opinion that perhaps he is here as Jones' successor because there are similarities between them. Very quickly then, let's talk about the January transfer window because it is getting closer and each week throughout December on UTASH, you will undoubtedly have some sort of January discussion that goes on. This week, I thought we would answer Daniel's rather excellent question and he's got in touch. He's basically just said there's been talk of players returning from injury in January, but who actually gets into our first 11? And then we've got some comparisons here. So we've got Dunk and Houndstrup. What do we reckon?
Stick with Dunk,
Matt?
Yeah, I'd say so. We don't know. We haven't seen enough of Houndstrup to judge, really, have we? So I'd stick with Dunk.
Mitov or Mannion?
Current form, stick with Mannion. don't upset a settled backline, settled defence.
Matt?
Yeah, agreement is breaking out here at UTAS, but I agree. I think Mannion hasn't done anything to lose his place. Why would you change? I think Dimi's got a bit of a fight on his hands there, unless Mannion has some kind of massive drop in form over the next few games.
And then do any of the following names slot straight into the team? So we've got Liam O'Neill, Okunibere, and Bennett.
Bennett's a difficult one, isn't it? Because everyone's kind of seeing him as this kind of great new hope to come back and turn everything around. And I don't want to put that pressure on him. I don't think that's going to be the case. I can't see him walking into the team in right back, which is his preferred position. I know he's playing okay at Walsall, but he is still young. He's still learning. I think he has made mistakes at Walsall, as you'd expect a player of that age to do. I can't see him unseating Williams, but I think he'll offer an option. Maybe on the bench. Maybe off the bench to come. It gives Williams a bit of a break. You know, he's basically ever present in the side, isn't he?
The only way Bennett starts for me, and here I am yet again championing a back three, but the only way I see Bennett getting into the lineup is him playing that right wing back role. He can offer sort of defensive duties, we know, and the praise that we hear from Walsall is his attacking speed and crossing, which we saw briefly last season as well. So I think for me, the only way he gets into the side is if we do a formation change. And I, to be honest, I'm not against doing a formation change, although as Matt pointed out, I don't think Bonner is. Matt, of those three names that we've listed, any of them slotting straight into the starting 11?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would expect Bennett to come back, but I think like he's the classic player who gets better every time he doesn't play. Not to say that he isn't an amazing prospect, and I was very excited by how he performed last season, but I think to expect him to come straight into our team, which is not in brilliant form, and make a real impact is a lot to ask. So I would expect him to come back and hopefully give us some cover on both fullback areas, because we're sort of just relying on Williams and Duncan not getting injured at the moment, aren't we? So I think both could probably do with the odd game out, even if they don't get injured. So I feel it'll be good to have him back, even if it's maybe not as good for his development as playing every game for Walsall. And obviously it'd be exciting to see what he can do. I think O'Neill, when is he going to come back? Will he ever come back? What's his injury? How long is he injured for? All sort of questions you could ask at any point in the last 5 years of Liam O'Neill, really. But I think if he was fit, he would be playing every game, because we need players in midfield. I think Warman's doing okay, like better than I expected. Simper's done as well as you could expect from a guy who's played like, 10 league games in his entire career. But, you know, O'Neill gives you more than that, really, at his best. So I think if he were fit, he would be in the team. I think Okunibere, we might be waiting a bit longer for him from what
I don't think he's going to be a Jan yesterday.
No, he was saying he's back jogging now, but they're not expecting him probably till February. So I think, given his other injury record as well, I think we can't expect too much from him anytime soon. So, yeah, that's a long rambly way of saying O'Neill, yes, Bennett sometimes, Okunibere, probably not.
I wonder if O'Neill comes back and unseats Digby, not necessarily from Digby not playing well, but just to give him a break. There's no one that can do his job. I mean, O'Neill doesn't do it particularly well, but Bonner likes, as do I, having that kind of strain of youth in the team, that pathway from the youth team to the first team that Warman and Simper give you.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. We haven't touched on Warman in this episode because we've had so many questions come in, but it didn't do himself any harm on Saturday's showing, did he? Let's move on then to preview our next league fixture. And I start with an apology. We don't have a fan preview this week. And I know there's going to be a lot of people devastated because our Fleetwood contact is Nappers, who is quite the character and is much loved here at UTAS. We did have an interview arranged in principle, but I've not heard from him. So I can only assume he is still smarting after Saturday night's defeat for England. So yeah, apologies for that. But yeah, let's try and get over that disappointment and have a look at the Fleetwood game as best we can. I guess the point, Matt, is that as good as the Plymouth game was, it's kind of meaningless and means nothing if we don't follow it up with at least a point away to Fleetwood, or ideally three.
Yeah, I mean, just a win would be nice, wouldn't it? But I think you're right. I think minimum, this is a game we've got to be looking at drawing. And I think indeed, Fleetwood do seem to draw quite a lot. So I wonder if that's quite a likely outcome. I know we don't draw very often at all, but yeah. I think we need to at least be targeting a point from this one. And yeah, if, like you say, if we lose, it's really back to square one a little bit, isn't it? And we'll be anxiously looking over our shoulders at what's directly beneath. So yeah, definitely. This is a game we need to take points from.
Owen, do you see any reason to make any changes to the starting 11? Obviously, you know, if someone's injured and can't start, but imagining everyone is fit to start next Saturday, would you keep it as it is, or would you look at where we're going, who we're playing, the type of pitch we'll be playing on, and make an argument to say, actually, stick Ironside back up top or move Lancaster out of the number 10 role?
No, I think consistency kind of breeds results, doesn't it? We've tried the Lancaster thing, we've tried the Ironside thing against strong opposition and weak opposition, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked over the past however many games. I think stick with what he did on Saturday, kind of everyone being well injury wise. Obviously, Janna didn't play much of a part. Apparently, he was recovering from
a back injury. He didn't train since Tuesday. Injury, apparently, yeah.
Kind of kept him out of training until quite late in the week. It'd be nice for his cameo to be a little bit more than kind of 6 or 7 minutes this time. That seems to be his role at the moment, like that kind of super sub type cameo appearance. So yeah, I stick with it. It'll be fairly obvious fairly quickly if it's not working, and then at least we know then, yeah, we do have options on the bench, whether we do go for that hold up play with Ironside up top, or whether you kind of put on a Janna or Tracy, someone with a bit of pace to really attack.
Let's go to predictions then. Matt, you said a draw a moment ago. Are you sticking with that, or are you going to change your mind at all?
I'm going to go, having struck a optimistic tone throughout this podcast, I'm going to go a bit pessimistic and say, yeah, 1-1. I think we will score a goal, but we're not going
to win. A point and a goal sounds great. So I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't sound too pessimistic to me, mate.
That's true.
Owen, any advances on 1-1?
I mean, looking at the table, Fleetwood are draw specialists, aren't they? They've drawn far more games than anyone else. But I fancy us to break our duck, so I'm going to go for a close 1-0 win to United.
Yes, Owen, love that. That result would definitely help in the relegation battle and then the picture that we find ourselves in. Just quickly on that, we're recording Sunday evening, and the news came out earlier that MK Dons have fired their manager. Thought it'd be interesting to get both your thoughts and your takes on that one. Seems like a good decision, Matt, or a bit of a risk?
I feel like it is. I mean, they've been bad for half the season. So, I mean, I think Bonner's probably one of the few managers in this league who would be able to. I mean, we haven't been bad for half the season, but they literally have. I think, so I guess it's always a risk when you change your manager, but I feel like from their point of view, they probably think we've got a bit of money, we've got good players, we shouldn't. I think they're not as good. When I looked at their squad at the start of the season, I was like, they're not going to make the playoffs again because they lost so many big players last summer. But having said that, they've still got a squad which should be mid-table to top half, really. So I think it makes sense to change manager, really. And I don't know, I'll be interested to see what sort of profile they go for next, because that's the sort of job where I would get a little bit concerned that they might look a bit further east.
They've got a thing for looking at Cambridge United for options and talent. Yeah. And It's such an interesting story, isn't it? How like your stock as a manager can drop so quickly. It's a guy who 6 months ago was touted as a sort of next big thing, and yeah, here he is with his P45. Owen, what's your take on the sacking?
Yeah, I definitely like them to not look too closely at what's going on just a bit to the east. I mean, they're one of those teams, aren't they? Like MK, like you look at the strength of their squad and you look at the table and our position in it, and you think if anyone's going to put together a run in that bottom four, which, you know, someone always does, it's going to be them. And they just haven't, have they? I think they're joint bottom on points. They've got the players to do it. Why aren't they doing it? Is it him? Is it something else? I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on Bonner getting the job and getting the best out of him, because I don't know. If he turned down Rotherham in the Championship, he's not going to go to Milton Keynes to try and keep them up, is he? Is he?
Let's hope not, mate. we had a question a few weeks ago about whether you would, you know, replace Bonner before the January window, so that whoever comes in has the window to recruit. So it seems that MK Dons were listening and disagreed with my answer of saying, no, don't do that, give him the window. But anyway, we shall see how it goes. Hopefully the MK Dons staying in the bottom four is a thing for the rest of the season, because I, for one, am rather enjoying it. That seems like a good place to end it for this week's pod. We've got a bit of an extra for you, which will be coming up in a few seconds' time, which is our monthly roundup of all things related to United's women's team. But before we listen to Adam's roundup, I want to say a big thank you to Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And a big thanks to Owen. And, you know, don't move to the A block, Owen. Stick in the B block is what I've learned.
I will. Yeah, your back will thank you.
Brilliant. I'm going to hand over to Adam now to catch up with everything about CUFC's women's side. But thank you for listening, and we'll be back next Monday.
Hello again. It's been such a long time since I updated you on how the U's women's team are doing that this is going to have to be a celebration of cup football, because Cambridge have racked up 5 games in 4 different competitions. I'll start with the furthest back in time. United fell to a 4-1 FA Cup loss to Norwich City. That shouldn't be confused with the 4-1 league loss to Norwich City from the opening day. This was away from home at one of the best teams in Cambridge's league, so a cup tie with Norwich was never going to be easy to get through. Like on the opening day, though, they took the lead. Ruth Fox's goal you may have seen on Twitter in the Goal of the Month award that Cambridge now run. But unfortunately, United conceded 3 before half-time, and then Norwich got a 4th in the second. So Cambridge go out of the FA Cup at the first hurdle this season. A bit better is the National League plate. I first want to talk about a fantastic 4-0 Derby Day win over Cambridge City. I noticed this morning that you can actually see the attendance figures on the FA website, so I know that this was the largest crowd at St Neots this season, only beaten by the game at the Abbey. And there was a local girls team who were mascots, and it just felt like a really good atmosphere, competitive for the second Derby Day win of the season for Cambridge. Wiltshire got 2 goals. The first was this early trademark calm lob over the keeper, and then she curled one into the top corner later in the first half. Otten got a 3rd, and then substitute Libby Fraser got the 4th. She hasn't been able to feature a lot for Cambridge this season, but that was a really good goal from outside the area. Certainly will have caught the eye. City had their own chances. I think they hit the bar at one point, but United defenders stepped out of defence well, dealing with forward balls, and they had a couple of good chances they didn't put away as well. In pretty miserable wet weather too, the ball was really hard to control, but that just shows the assets of a player like Sarah Wiltshire, who was able to wrangle it in, provide much needed composure and get United going forward. As might be expected from the conditions, both teams were sort of trying to get in behind their opponents. United did this better and City struggled to handle it a bit. There was a real focus on the wings from both teams, which is potentially why it was not Alicia Stoico-Down's best game. She's a player I've praised a lot going through the middle for United this season. But one player who did play well and made the most of what I think was a second straight start at the time was Ella Marden on the right wing. Particularly in the first half, she had some really good turns, one-touch passing, and would cut in on her left foot, from which she tested the City keeper a couple of times and provided really good balls into the box, which I just really enjoyed seeing. Shout out to Lauren Webb as well. I've maybe undersold how many times City got in behind a pretty good Cambridge defence, but Webb stood firm, kept a clean sheet, and Cambridge win 4-0. Unfortunately, United have since gone out of the tournament. They lost last weekend to Cheltenham 4-2 after a pretty tough first half. They were 2-0 down at the break against a really high-pressing physical team trying to box Cambridge in from the league above. United came out swinging, though, in the second half and were arguably the better team in the second period. They pulled two goals back either side of a pretty baffling penalty awarded to Cheltenham, and then they conceded a fourth when they were pushing for an equaliser late in the game. Sarah Wiltshire got both of the goals again, but it was a real team performance in which I think Ella Marden also really impressed. Fourth or fifth straight start in a row at that point. And it was one of those games where there's no shame in the defeat, really good, but ultimately Cambridge are out of a second cup. The one league game Cambridge have played, they got a win over Hounslow, a Hounslow team I won't focus on too much. They're bottom of the league and Cambridge turned them over 12-0, which isn't an unfamiliar result for them this season. From a Cambridge perspective, though, it was a really good game. Hat-trick for Partridge, a double hat-trick for Wiltshire, and if there was any doubt previously, I think she stands a pretty good chance of being United's top scorer this year. And then there was one goal each for Rouse, Stoiko Down, and Sydney Naylor, who is a new signing, I think, from Notts Forest. It was six in each half for United, and I really recommend if you're dedicated, you'd probably have to scroll back quite a long way at this point, but going and seeing United's Twitter, where they shared a video of one of Wiltshire's goals, this long-range free kick, it was pretty good. There's just enough time as well to mention a 7-0 win over Leverington in the County Cup, one competition that Cambridge are still in. Ella Marden started again, got an early goal. It's really nice to see Cambridge starting early. They've scored first in the first couple of minutes, really, of all three of these wins, perhaps taking advantage of opponents before they've really settled. And then the regular cast of Partridge and Wiltshire got their goals, and also Sydney Naylor, who got 2-2. Good start for her. She started from the bench against Cheltenham. And that's where I'll leave you. I'll just finish by saying that you can go and support United's women's team in their next league game, which is on the 18th of December at St Neots Town against AFC Wimbledon.